Hey, GeoTrackers, Dr. Hal here, host of the GeoTrack podcast. Well, we made it to April, that time of the year when we look ahead at the upcoming Atlantic hurricane season. Every April, I meet up with a lot of my friends in South Padre Island, Texas, for the National Tropical Weather Conference, an event that brings together scientists, emergency planners, and just people that are really involved with the hurricane and disaster community, so we can talk about what we can expect this upcoming hurricane season and how we can be better prepared. Well, I went around with my recorder recording a lot of little interviews at the conference, and we made them into GeoTrack Podcast number 92, Perspectives from the National Tropical Weather Conference. You'll be pretty familiar with our first guest if you listen to the podcast. Phil Klotzbach is senior research scientist at Colorado State University. He helps lead up the team that does seasonal hurricane predictions and forecasting of what we can expect the upcoming hurricane season. Phil was also the star of GeoTrack Podcast number 72, The Janitor Throughout the Data, the backstory of seasonal hurricane forecasting with Phil Klotzbach. Phil was obviously, his presentation was one of the most interesting there at the conference. A lot of people are really curious about what we can expect the upcoming season. Everyone's interested to talk to Phil. A lot of media were there to interview with him, and he even took a few minutes to come on the mic here with us. Phil, welcome to the GeoTrack podcast.
Forecasting a very busy hurricane season, a total of 23 named storms. Of those 23, 11 becoming hurricanes, and of those 11, 5 becoming major category 3, 4, 5 hurricanes. That compares with an average season of 14 storms, 7 hurricanes, and 3 major hurricanes.
Phil, that is a lot of named storms. Is that a record for your forecasting?
Yeah, for our early April forecast, it is a record, and we've been putting those out since 1995. The most hurricanes we've also forecast this far out.
So what are some of the factors that go into that really active hurricane season that you're forecasting?
Yeah, the primary factor is the Atlantic water temperatures are extremely warm right now. So both the tropical and subtropical Atlantic are very, very warm. Normally, warmer water provides more fuel for hurricanes. We expect that warm water to persist, or warmer than normal water to persist throughout the hurricane season. We also currently have an El Nino. That's likely to transition over to La Nina. That's colder water in the eastern and central tropical Pacific. Typically leads to reduced levels of vertical wind shear in the Atlantic. Less shear is more conducive for hurricane formation and intensification.
And you had mentioned CSU puts out several forecasts through the season, right?
That's correct. So our first forecast is this one. We updated it in early June, early July, and early August. As you might expect, the seasonal forecasts have more skill as you get closer to the peak of the hurricane season. So while season starts June 1st, often June and July are pretty quiet. Normally the season doesn't really ramp up until the middle of August.
Phil, you mentioned that the water out there in the Atlantic is already so warm. You mentioned if it warms at maybe the slowest rate of all time, it would still be really up there near the top, right? It's really that unusually warm.
That's correct, yeah. So we're running about 1 degree Celsius, about 1.5, 2 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than normal across the tropical Atlantic, which doesn't seem that much in the mid-latitudes, but in the tropics, that's a lot of warmth. So even if stuff warmed at a fairly slow rate from here on out, we would still be talking one of the warmest years in the tropical Atlantic on record.
Well, thanks for taking time to come on the podcast. Wishing you a safe hurricane season, and we'll be following you closely throughout this season.
Thanks so much, Hal. Take care.
Thanks, Phil, for taking time to come on the podcast. Wow, it looks like we are in store for an extremely active hurricane season in the Atlantic, with the most number of named storms ever forecast from CSU in the month of April. So again, they do forecasting several times throughout the year, but that first forecast comes out in April, and they have never forecast 23 named storms before since they've been doing this since 1995. So it does look like an extremely active season out there in the Atlantic. I wanted to provide a little bit of context about seasonal forecasting. I've just been seeing some noise on social media and within some of my friends' groups as well, where I live in Southeast Texas, people saying things like, oh, come on, every year they forecast a busy season, and almost like having some skepticism about seasonal forecasting or even questioning the utility of it. I just wanted to weigh in on that a little bit. So I've recently heard some people saying every year they predict it's going to be a busy hurricane season. That's actually not true. If you're keeping score, back in 2023, last year, CSU and many of the other groups forecast a near normal hurricane season. It just so happens that the Atlantic became incredibly warm throughout the season, and it became the fourth busiest season on record. That was 2023, with 20 named storms. Now, also, if you're keeping score and keeping track, you may have noticed that in recent years, and even in recent decades, it seems like most years there are more named storms and often more hurricanes and major hurricanes than normal, than the long-term climatological normal. And let's weigh in on this a little bit. So this has to do with something called teleconnections, at least in part. And so teleconnections are when you change weather and water patterns in one part of the globe, and that affects the weather somewhere else. And so in the Atlantic, one of these teleconnections is called the Atlantic Multidecadal Oscillation, or AMO, and that's basically just getting at, are the sea surface temperatures in the tropical Atlantic warmer or cooler than normal? Climatologically, what's really interesting is that we've been in a positive phase of the AMO, or warmer than normal water temperatures in the tropical Atlantic, since around 1995. So you're right if you think that most years we have seen predictions and observations with more than normal hurricanes, at least compared to the climatological average. And that's been happening really quite a bit, especially since the mid-90s. However, when you go back before then, for example, in the 70s and 80s, a lot of the hurricane seasons had much less than the long-term normal number of hurricanes. So that is, you know, interesting to look at. And I know the work they're doing at CSU and some of these other research groups, they're very science-based, data-driven, evidence-based. This isn't hype. This isn't the media trying just to scare you or get you to click on their stories. This is really evidence-based, really credible science that they're doing. And you can actually go to Colorado State's research page for hurricane forecast, like seasonal hurricane forecasting, and see a little bit about the science behind what they're doing. And so I think for people that are skeptical or even just curious to learn more about it, that can really help us as well. There's also another element to this where people say, well, you know, why? What difference does it make as far as a seasonal forecast? Like, so, you know, we should be well prepared anyway. And so there is some validity to that. And the point is, we should all be prepared every hurricane season, whether it's forecast to be a very active season or an inactive season. And we can think of seasons in the past, for example, 1983, four named storms. So a much lower than normal hurricane season, but one of those named storms was a major hurricane that struck the Houston-Galveston corridor, Hurricane Alicia, in 1983. We can also think back to 1992, the A storm, or the first named storm, didn't really come around until the end of August, but that A storm was Hurricane Andrew, a Cat 5 hurricane that hit the southern part of Metro Miami. So like they say, all it takes is one. You don't need 20 named storms to have a high impact season. Just one storm in a high impact place or a populated place, and we could have some big impact. So that is something to think about. And finally, too, some of these forecasts, maybe they relate especially well to businesses and organizations. For example, if you're running a hospital in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and you want to know, should we invest a little more money in more generators? Well, seeing the forecast for an extremely active hurricane season, if you're right on the cusp of making that investment or not, you may decide, you know what, in light of this forecast, let's make some more investments. So again, we all should be prepared for every hurricane season, but I think some of the seasonal forecasting is especially useful for businesses and organizations, facilities, whether it's, you know, in healthcare or oil and gas refineries. They're making decisions based on probability and likeliness. And I think it's really important to look at the seasonal forecast, among other things, to get an idea of what we can expect for the season ahead. Anyway, Phil, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. Always great to hear from you, and we're excited to follow CSU's updated forecast throughout the season. Well, our next guest, I'm going to introduce two guests together. Now, they don't necessarily really collaborate or work on the same professional team, but their messages really overlap. John Dawson is a meteorologist with Fox 26 TV in Houston. And the other guest I'm going to introduce at the same time is Haskell Moore. He's president and owner of Hurricane Preparedness Training and Consulting, LLC. They're both Texas-based, and both of these guys really shared a lot with others at the conference about preparedness, how to get ready for hurricane season, and I really thought that their messages overlap quite a bit. So I introduced them together here. I did mini interviews with both of them, and I think you'll really enjoy what they have to say. We're here at the conference, John. How, what are you learning this conference?
I'm learning that I don't know as much as I would like to know about it. The AI was fantastic. I mean, and that's just something that I have avoided trying to even learn about is AI. So it's really good to actually hear from somebody who really knows what they're doing. And then, again, a couple of the other presentations this morning have been just really kind of deep stuff that you have to kind of brood on a little bit. But, yeah, it's been a fantastic experience and being able to be here and really listen to some people who know what they're talking about.
I love the wide variety here. You know, there are so many different topics that we touch on.
Yeah, I agree. Our lunch speaker was talking about, you know, the trauma side of things and the stress and it goes into that, which is, again, along more of a journalistic approach. And then we again had the AI speaker, and then we're hearing more about structures of storms themselves and why they're doing it or what they're going to be doing. And then the drone talk, we had one that was about, you know, drones. And so it's a really wide variety of stuff going on.
John, shifting topics back home in Metro Houston, you're really popular there with Fox 26. You do a hurricane gear test. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what that's about?
I have a segment that I do on Fox 26 in Houston, and of course it's available all across the world and on other platforms and everything. But it is a short segment, a two to three minute segment that airs that talks about, you know, testing products that people need in the hurricane supplies, whether it be a evacuation supplies like a go bag or whether you're a shelter in place supplies. It can really apply to both. And just, I always try to remind everybody, you know, there's some basic things that we need. And so it's fun to be able to show somebody a product. And then while I'm showing a product, whether I'm saying good things or bad things about it, I can share what I think is important to note. Like if I'm showing a flashlight, I can say, you know, talk about the batteries of it, talk about the light, you know, how it emits the light and how much or how long those run times are. So you can really spend a lot of time with one specific product, but share a lot of information that would apply even if it's not that product.
Sure. So you're really doing a test and you're saying, okay, I've evaluated this product and here's my opinion on how well it works.
Yeah, most of the time I've really spent some time with the product. There's a handful of times, and I'll usually be very open about it, that it's a little bit of an unboxing type of a segment. But most of the time, yeah, it's something that I've really gotten my hands on. I've used a little bit, and then, of course, relied on some of my experience of just going through some tropical systems and living here in the Houston area, that you just kind of know that I don't know if that's going to work so great, or know that this would have really helped if I would have had it, you know, kind of a thing. So, the hurricane gear test is a great way. Again, I'm trying to keep, you know, to show people things, whether I'm not trying to make you buy a specific product, but I'm trying to make you get concepts and ideas of things that you need, you know, in your kit. And everything applies to everybody's individual anyway. There's no just generic one thing I can give somebody, and you're able to kind of really see some things and hear some information that's helpful.
John, in your talk, you talked about the main categories, the main topics that people need to be thinking about with supplies. I mean, what are those main areas?
Yeah, I try to break it down to five things. If people could just remember five things, it's not going to completely get you ready, but it's going to certainly get you headed the right direction. The five things are food and water, a light source like a flashlight, power. Everybody has some power needs, and the minimum would be how to charge a phone when there is no electricity, and then a first aid kit. Those are the basic five things. Again, food, water, a light source, charge your phone, and a first aid kit.
I can't tell you how many people just think of food and water, and they're all of a sudden their cell phone battery's dying, or it's night, they don't have a light source, they're thinking, well, I have food and water, but now I'm in the black, right?
Yeah, no, totally. And that's why, obviously, if you were trying to make a comprehensive list, it's going to be just pages of stuff. But you're not going to get it all in five things, but at least you've got a huge jump and a huge start. And maybe you can get to where there's a point that you can get some more help. You know, you're always thinking about, all right, can I make it for 3 days without any sort of outside assistance? And it's really more like a 3 to 7 days. But again, I'm just trying to get it as simple as possible. Can I make it 3 days without any sort of outside assistance? And, you know, you get those five things, and I really think that, yeah, you can do that.
John, thanks for taking time to come on the podcast. How can our listeners find you online if they want to look you up or see this hurricane gear test online?
Yeah, John Dawson, Fox 26 is kind of the handle used for social media. So at John Dawson, Fox 26 is a great way to search. I like Instagram. That's my favorite. So I'm more active on there than the other platforms, but I'm on all of them, of course. And that's a good way to kind of do it. And then I try to use that hashtag of hurricane gear test for, you know, that specific. So hashtag hurricane gear test.
I love it because it's so applicable. I posted it yesterday when you were presenting in real time. I was posting that, and a lot of our viewers were just looking at this because it's so applicable that people can use to help them out. Wishing you a safe hurricane season, and we'll be watching you for your forecast this year.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks.
I'm here with Haskell. Haskell, I met you for the first time at the conference. How has this conference been for you so far?
It's been fantastic. This is one of the best hurricane conferences I've ever been to. Really like it.
What are some of the lessons you've learned here so far?
Well, I don't know if it'd be a lesson learned, but it was certainly useful information from Dr. Klotzbach, what we're looking at the upcoming season, and how preparedness is really going to be important this year, no matter where you are. If you're in a hurricane zone, you need to be getting ready.
Haskell, you do a lot with product preparedness and just understanding different products that can help people and really help people at the personal level get ready. What are some things people should be thinking about in relation to products and just personal preparedness?
Okay, so I am a Maglite ambassador, so the first thing that always comes to mind is a good flashlight. And I have the Maglite ML300 L4D LED long running. That's how you find it on the website. The long running flashlight is probably the very best flashlight out there for emergency preparedness. And I've tested over 200 products to come to that conclusion. And of course, if people want to get a break on that price, they can use the discount code of Hurricane30 that we had set up for the conference here and get 30% off the entire product line on Maglite. The other thing is a water bob, water storage for the tub. That's something that we used extensively. I've lived in the Houston area for 47 years, so I've seen a lot of storms come and go. The other thing that I recommend is that perhaps something like a Berkey water filter. If you're having water that's available, but you have a boil notice, having something like a Berkey filter or one of the high-efficiency filters is great. Generators are always very high on my list. I use the little Honda 2200 UI is a great generator. Or there's a whole lot of products out there to support your mobile phone. I tell people their mobile phone is their lifeline. Something along those lines as well, such as either something like the Anker power bars or one of the larger solar generators. Those are kind of the bread and butter things, and then I get off into other products as well. But those are the main things that I usually
do. Haskell, tell me a little bit about these power bars. I mean, would this be something you use to recharge your phone if the power went out?
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, Anker makes several. And the reason I point out Anker, I don't represent them, but they're great products, and I have probably a half dozen of them. I recommend that you get something around at least 26,800 milliamp hours is good. Getting something up in the 5,600 or 56,000 range is even better. So you can not only charge your phone, but if you have a tablet or something like that, you can keep those going, and you need to be able to keep that up and running depending on where you are for at least 7 days.
Haskell, let's go back to the flashlight. I talked to some of my friends and they said, oh, my cell phone has this flashlight. What's the problem with thinking and preparing in that way for your cell phone to provide illumination?
Okay, so imagine yourself on a roof and the water's coming up and the sun's going down and there's a helicopter looking to rescue you. Do you want to count on that little built-in flashlight that you have in your cell phone, or do you want something like a bag light that puts out 1,000 lumens, has a strobe mode, is reliable, is water resistant, is impact resistant? You know, if you're out there in the rain, well, you got your phone out there in the rain, so how long is that going to last? So you want a really, really good flashlight. And of course, again, when you're using the flashlight on your cell phone, you're running that battery down at a really high rate. And again, that cell phone may be your lifeline.
That's a good point. And a lot of people, they're thinking, well, I just need to light up my bedroom. But you're talking about a catastrophe where you may need to be rescued, or you may need to leave your room and get outside or shine that light to be rescued. So you're bringing to mind a bunch of scenarios people may not have thought of.
Yeah, absolutely. And what if you want to see the water that is coming up your driveway? What if you're looking for a lost child, heaven forbid, looking for a lost pet, looking for damage on your roof? Your cell phone's not going to cut it for that. You may need to be able to project light at a really, really long range and be able to see. Or if you're outside in the rain working on a generator or transfer switch to your house, making repairs, you don't want to have to depend on a cell phone light in that kind of situation where you can have a good drop-resistant, water-resistant, rugged, reliable flashlight.
Haskell, how can people find you online or find your products?
You can go to hidefromthewind.com, hidefromthewind.com, like run from the water, hide from the wind. And that's the webpage. I have a lot of information out there, especially on products that I recommend or products that they may have not thought of for their checklist. And, of course, to purchase Maglites, go to www.maglite.com. And, again, the discount code is HURRICANE30 for 30% off.
Thanks so much, Haskell. Wishing you a great conference and a safe hurricane season up ahead.
Thank you very much. And to all the listening audience, this is the one you need to get ready for. It looks like it's going to be a whopper.
Thanks so much, John and Haskell, for taking time to come on the podcast. Well, I really enjoyed what John had to say about really focusing our attention on the five things that we really need to survive 3 days without outside assistance. I thought that was pretty cool because, as he mentioned, there are dozens of things that we could list, but those five things, food, water, a light source, a power source, and first aid are really the critical things. And just going through that, food, obviously you want non-perishable food, canned food, things that aren't going to spoil. I thought water was really interesting, and that seems obvious, but let's talk a little bit about that. So we cannot live very long as humans without water. And I noticed I go to all these emergency disaster conferences and resiliency conferences all over the country. And a couple of years ago, I noticed I did not really have a backup water supply for myself. And a gallon of water only costs about $1. So I thought, you know, I should probably take $5 and invest in 5 gallons of water for myself. And I would recommend 5 gallons per person in your household. But it made me think about how unprepared I was and the dangers that can come with not having a backup water supply. Keep in mind, this is not just for named hurricanes. So you could have a flood or a natural disaster at any time of the year. But also imagine if your local community put out a statement that there's been a water main break or something went wrong chemically in the water system. Do not drink the water for the next 2 days. Well, you might say, well, I could just go to the store and buy bottled water. Well, hundreds or thousands of people in your community are going to say the same thing. When you get to the store, there may not be any water for you there. So year round, we should really have a backup water supply. It's the one thing we really cannot live without. Also, I thought it was interesting that both John and Haskell talked about having a light source, and Haskell really went into depth about talking about mag lights and some of really having a more powerful beam. And he mentioned too, this is not just for navigating around your dark house when electricity goes out. You may need to be rescued. You may need to get outside and look around. And so really good mention there. And I know I'm guilty sometimes of just saying, well, I'll depend on my flashlight on my phone. And that might not be enough. As Haskell also mentioned, those phone flashlights will really drain your battery of your cell phone as well. And so really you want an additional light source. So really good perspective there from both Haskell and John. Again, you can check out John's hurricane gear test that he posts online. He goes through these different products and really tests them. And then Haskell's been doing a lot of really interesting work and a really bird's eye view of hurricane preparedness. In fact, he even wrote a book. This is Haskell's book written by Haskell Moore called Hurricane Preparedness for the Home and Family. And, you know, this is a fantastic book that really gets into really thinking through in a very, I guess, analytical, systematic way. And one of the things I'm reading the book right now just talked about preparing way ahead of hurricane season and also working through and making a lot of lists. Boy, I really needed to hear that because sometimes I try to wing it. I don't have a list and then I'm forgetting things. He said, really make lists, be organized and do this out ahead of time when there's not a run on supplies in the store. So really good perspective there from both John and Haskell. I think some of the biggest lessons I learned at the conference were really thinking about personal preparedness. Resiliency has to start at home, and these are things that we can do way out ahead of hurricane season. Well, our next guest, you'll be familiar with her. She was the guest or the star, I should say, of GeoTrek podcast number 4, Melissa Moon, Insights from a Tornado Chasing Mom. So Melissa is a friend of mine that lives in a DFW metroplex not far from Fort Worth. Her passion is really severe weather. She's done a lot of tornado chasing and gotten into some big hail over time, and she really loves severe weather in the Southern Plains. She has a meteorology degree from University of Oklahoma. So it was a little bit surprising, and I was excited to see her at a tropical weather conference. I couldn't wait to go over with a mic and ask her what her perspective is on the difference between tropical weather and severe weather that you'd find in the Southern Plains. Melissa, welcome to the podcast. You were on the podcast before, and we're used to you talking and focusing a lot on severe weather. What was it like being at a tropical weather conference?
It was actually pretty fun. The location was great. South Padre, I mean, it's fitting for a tropical weather conference. Very informative. I liked how there were some very practical topics, but then there were also some topics that were very heavy into the science and the analysis and things that I had not really thought about since I was in meteorology school many years ago.
What were maybe one or two of your favorite things about the conference that stand out to you, or maybe things that you would take back if you were organizing another conference somewhere?
So if I was organizing a conference, I would say the way that they had the setup was really good. They had a big screen behind everybody, so you could see the name of the speaker, and just you could really clearly see their presentation topic. This conference does a great job with that. I did like the opportunities with the breaks and like the social the night before, and just the chance to get to know people who are also at the conference. And then also... Sorry, what was the rest of the question?
Oh, just in general, things that you liked about the conference.
Okay, standout things. And the topics. Like I said, there were some things that I learned specifically about like hurricane analysis, and then some things that I can use for forecasting. I really thought that the topic about how AI is going to be like part of forecasting's future was really interesting. And there were just some unique things. I thought the presentation about cruise ship forecasting was really interesting as well.
Yeah, really a wide variety kind of these different sectors, people that do different things. And it was interesting just in a lot of the conversations I did hear overlap of some of the storm chasers that go into hurricanes are also going into severe weather. And there definitely was overlap, I thought, between tropical and severe weather at times.
Yeah, and I know that one presentation about the surge cams, he was telling me, I talked to him afterwards, he was saying he also has a project in the work with hail. And so I thought that was cool because there's definitely people out there that would probably work with him on surge cams and also on hail as well.
Yeah, so I know you've done a lot of severe weather chasing. Coming to a conference like this, does this ever get you thinking if you had the chance you might do some hurricane chasing too perhaps one day?
I might. The only thing is I would have to have my, I guess, work schedule workout so that if I get stranded somewhere for a week at a time, I wouldn't be in trouble or anything like that with my job. That's, you know, I do have kind of a bucket list. I do want to get into the eye of a hurricane before I die. It's just probably finding the right timing for me to do it and the right location, ideally somewhere where I don't have to go too far.
Yeah, you mentioned the timing. You know, I started with chasing hurricanes and then I added severe weather later, and they're really different as far as the time. A hurricane is at least days to maybe even a week sometimes if you're stuck somewhere. I was surprised coming severe weather chasing, these storms hit and move through and a half an hour later you're going out for pizza. It's just a short event, right, when it's severe weather.
Yeah, and that's one thing I kind of like about tornado chasing is I can go out, you know, a couple hours to my west, see a really pretty photogenic tornado, go eat a steak with my friends, and then I'm sleeping in my bed at night, which, I mean, that's kind of what I'm used to. So with hurricanes, you kind of have to plan a little bit more because you have to be prepared in case you get stuck.
Yeah, taking in food, there's sometimes an evacuation zone, everything's closed. Yeah, so it's just a different game. Well, hey, thanks for coming on the podcast, and I hope you have a great rest of your conference and rest of the severe and hurricane season up ahead.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Melissa, for taking time to come on the podcast. Well, really interesting always to compare severe weather impacts to tropical weather impacts. And Melissa talked a little bit about the difference in duration. You know, a lot of people that have experienced severe weather in the Southern Plains, these storms hit and they're gone sometimes in minutes. They're usually short-lived. Whereas compared to tropical weather, I remember when we were in Hurricane Ian in 2022 in Southwest Florida, I think we had hurricane force winds for maybe 12 or 14 hours. These large tropical systems, large hurricanes, the wind is just relentless. It never seems like it's going to end. And that's really a big distinction and difference there between severe weather and tropical, and really an interesting thing that Melissa picked up on. Well, our final guest produced really one of the most interesting talks at the conference, at least as far as everybody wanting to talk about it. Leonard Busu is an assistant professor of information systems and operations management at the University of Washington. He gave a talk about AI and weather, and this really interested a lot of people. As you know, AI, artificial intelligence, it's growing. It's growing incredibly rapidly. It's everywhere now, really becoming a bigger part of science and our data analysis. And I couldn't wait to grab Leonard after his talk and ask him a few questions about the future of AI and weather prediction. Leonard, great to meet you here at the conference. I know so many people were interested in your presentation about AI. Could you tell us, like, what are some of the main things we should think about with AI and say, tropical weather or just extreme weather in general?
Thanks for the opportunity. So what I would like to say is AI is this amazing artificial intelligence that can learn from data. But what's magical is that it doesn't need to know about physics. It learns directly the patterns and relationships through what it sees in the training data, which means it's important to have good data. So that's the key thing number one. Number two, AI is able to ingest data super fast. And that is a game changer, especially for tropical weather forecasting, because you want to execute the forecast as fast as possible. Those are great things, but AI also comes with challenges. AI is a black box, which means we don't understand how AI makes decisions. And we like glass box models in the field, which means we can understand exactly why the model is thinking the hurricane may go that way or that way. There is progress that needs to be made. On top of this, I believe that AI has enormous amount of capabilities that are untapped so far because we don't have enough collaboration yet between people doing AI research and people doing tropical weather research. I believe that we should foster more collaboration such that more vocabulary, problems, challenges can be exchanged. And I really believe that's also the future for all of us.
What do you think, like, the frontier is, or what will be the advances we see, you think, in the next several years with AI and weather?
So I'm really happy to see that there are currently models available, AI-based, that are better than physics-based models. So Google, with the DeepMind division, they've released models that can already forecast, for instance, temperature, rain. They do nowcasting and also 10-day forecasts. It's extremely good. It works super well, even better sometimes than physics-based models. I believe that we are going to have more and more of those. And I believe that it's bringing more attention to what AI can do. Historically, people in the weather field don't like AI as much because you can't understand it. But because it's so powerful, they're starting to revisit what we think about it, thinking, okay, maybe we don't understand exactly how the decisions are made, but it's that accurate, that fast, that we should still push. And on the way, we are going to figure out ways to make it understandable. So we're really looking for how to mix approaches versus just AI or just weather-based. We are going to mix the two, and this is what is going to happen in the future.
Could you see people doing a lot of the training for AI, or will more of that be automated, or will it be really a hybrid or mixture of the two?
The challenge, that's a very good point, is training AI is expensive and is highly technical. For instance, ChatGPT that many people use probably required up to $100 million for training. It's a massive amount of money. Not every lab can afford this. However, it turns out that attracting money for AI is quite easy these days, which means taking the angle of weather forecasting through AI might attract more funds, which is great for the field. I also want to mention that there are private companies doing amazing models, for instance, OpenAI, Anthropic, Google, Microsoft, etc. But also there is open source. The open source community is spearheading AI as well. We have access to top-notch models for free because they also have resources that they want to allow people to use such that we have a more widespread collaborative usage. And I really believe that this is also an opportunity. We can leverage the cloud computing more widely than before because people care about sharing the knowledge.
Leonard, thank you so much for taking time to come on the podcast. How can our listeners find you or find your research?
So you can find me at my website, www.leobix.us. And I would love for you to check my AI content. For instance, I give a lot of courses. I've taught at MIT. I'm helping Harvard. I'm teaching at University of Washington in Seattle. I'm teaching students from undergrads, PhDs, masters, MBAs. I'm teaching to very broad audiences how to build better human AI interactions. So please come check this out and learn more about how we can use AI.
Leonard, I know a lot of our listeners are going to want to check that out. I'm really excited to learn more. Thank you for educating us, and we're excited to follow your career in the future.
Thank you so much. It's an amazing opportunity to be with you today, and I'm hoping that more of you will be enlightened by AI and make the world better for all of us. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Leonard, for taking time to come on the podcast. Wow, such interesting insights there from Leonard. He mentioned that sometimes AI-based models are predicting weather more efficiently or more accurately than some of the physics-based models. I thought that was fascinating. He mentioned too that we do not always understand how this works. AI often works in a black box. We as humans prefer a glass box. We want to get under the hood and see how everything works. Sometimes with AI, you don't know exactly how that's working. AI is really bringing together these massive data sets, and AI is very efficient at finding these relationships and connecting understanding of really maybe what's happening, but we don't always know why. Really fascinating stuff there. I think the future is going to be really remarkable as we move ahead. Leonard said that perhaps in the future, the most optimal models will be a hybrid of both AI and physics-based models. We'll just have to see. He did mention that it's pretty easy to attract money and investment in AI right now. He mentioned ChatGPT attracted as really required as much as $100 million to train this model. So when he mentioned training, a lot of times we have automated methods or even human-based methods that train or verify the accuracy of these models. And that's just something that's really continuing, and we're investing more and more in over time as a scientific community. Hey, I'm definitely not a computer programmer or the most tech-savvy person, but I had an experience that relates with what Leonard was saying. He was saying that AI is finding relationships and saying what's happening, but we don't always know why. I had a similar experience in my doctoral dissertation. I was really trying to understand the relationship between hurricane winds and coastal floods or storm surges. So when a hurricane hits the coast, it pushes this wall of salt water called a storm surge, which is the most deadly destructive natural hazard on the planet. And so when I built the first comprehensive flood data set for the Gulf Coast, I then brought in hurricane track data that told you where these hurricanes went and how powerful they were. And I basically ran some correlation tests to see how this all plays out. What's the relationship between hurricane winds and storm surge levels? And what shocked me and I thought was fascinating, there was a very clear pattern. The pattern showed that the correlation between hurricane winds and storm surge levels is not really that great when you consider the landfall wind speed. But as you move out in time before landfall, the relationship gets better and it peaks. The optimal relationship there is when you look at the wind speeds 18 hours before landfall, that correlates best with the storm surge levels. I was so excited to find this out. Again, this was a data-driven result. I submitted these results for publication. I was so excited. I was a young scientist. I never discovered something like this before. What shocked me was the feedback I got from the editors and the scientific reviewers said, oh, this is ridiculous. You know, this is not line up with our physical theories. This doesn't match how we think of the world in terms of physics. And so I thought it was interesting. Eventually that paper and another one did get published. But what I thought was interesting is in this case, I was just allowing big data sets to work together and to do correlation analysis to find what is happening. But we really need physicists to say why it's happening. So in my work, I never said why. And so that's what I picked up from Leonard with this. AI is not really saying why it's happening. We desperately need physicists then to run with the next step and explain why. But AI and some of these big data sets now are able to find what. But again, that doesn't necessarily go against physics. We just need the physicists then to sometimes refine the theories and improve the theories, if that makes sense. So I had a little bit of a taste there with my doctoral dissertation, seeing an example where big data sets can give us insights into what's happening in ways we never saw before. So Leonard, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Leonard's website is www.leobix.us. He has courses on there and a lot of other content that I'm going to be definitely reading. Leonard's a great teacher for just taking these abstract ideas and bringing them down to our level and relating them to where we're at in our professional work. So if you want to learn more about how AI could be used in natural disaster prediction, in meteorological forecasting, anything like that, go to Leobix, leobix.us, and you can see Leonard's website where there'll be a lot of resources there for you to use. Well, y'all, thank you so much for tuning in on this podcast episode. Again, we're expecting an extremely active Atlantic hurricane season. Like we always say, prepare for the worst, hope for the best. I'm hoping that we make it through this hurricane season with a minimum amount of loss of life and property, but we have to be prepared. It seems like everything's lining up for a busy season this year. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast, for supporting it. Thanks to your support and sharing our content with others. We're still ranked as the number one podcast on the topic of natural disasters, according to FeedSpot. And that's all about you, our listeners. Y'all have been awesome. You give us so much feedback. And if there's anything you want to know, if you have any questions, if you have any suggestion for future podcast episode, give us a shout. We'd love to talk to you and interact with you as well. Y'all, it is one of the most beautiful times of the year. It's springtime in the Northern Hemisphere. Make sure you get outside, look up at the sky, enjoy this beautiful time of the year, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the GeoTrek Podcast.